At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Good morning. How do we do this again? I haven't done a weekend recap and rant in a hot minute, but I have to give a shout out to Derek Kumpferman. Met him for the first time in person. I know that I've only interacted with him via Facebook, but we had a big Norfin USA Pro Staff photo shoot thing going on this weekend up in Hayward, Wisconsin. And I finally was able to make it to one of these. Usually, when I was fishing Minnesota Made, I always had a tournament, and I couldn't make it. Oh, by the way, welcome to the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast. I am Dale Luganbill. Thank you for joining. Yeah, that's how out of shape I am with these solo episodes. So that's, yeah. So, all right, get back into it. So, this weekend, Hayward, Wisconsin, the Norfin Pro Staff photo shoot. It's a ton of fun. Met a bunch of really cool guys. And some of the people I knew already. Some people I only knew, like I said, through social media. So it was really nice to shake some hands and meet people face-to-face, share some ice time, as it were. And yeah, 5 lakes in 2 days. That's not too shabby, you know, trying to get some different kinds of content. I think we got everything we really wanted. We had to kind of scratch it out. Conditions were not prime. Saturday morning it was, I don't know if it officially hit minus 20, but it was damn close. I know I saw minus 17 on my truck at one point in time. But there was no wind and the sun was shining. And actually that day it actually warmed up to, people in the south would be freaking out, but like, oh, it warmed up to, you know, like 5-7 above. But again, the sun was shining and there was like very, very little wind. It was almost dead calm. I mean, it was dead calm to start the day, and then just like the lightest little breeze came up later. But I'm always amazed at how I can fish without gloves when it's like that. It's 5 degrees, single digits, above zero, and I can fish without gloves. And I love it because I hate fishing with gloves. And I think if you ask any serious ice fisherman out there, they probably tell you the exact same thing. Like, gloves are just irritating. You lose feel, you can't tie on jigs, you can't bait your hook, and you're adjusting your plastics, or you're putting on a waxy, whatever thing is, or a minnow head. Like, it's just, gloves are a pain in the ass. So it's nice when you don't have to wear them. But the thing that amazes me about that is, like, the human body's ability to, like, adapt, right? So you got, this was never more evident. It was about a year ago. It was like shortly after I moved up to Orr, Minnesota, and it was that first fall. I'm fishing on a Pelican, and it was like the first cold day in like October. It was like 42 degrees, and I'm out there fishing, and I don't have gloves on because it's 40 whatever. But it was, you know, like, it was, that was probably a good 15 or 20 degrees colder than it had been, right? So it was like the first real cold wave of fall. And my hands just got so stiff and cold. I had a hard time tying on lures and just, you know, working my bait caster. It just, like, they were just so cold and stiff. And in that moment, I was like, how is this possible? Because I know in a few months, I'll be fishing without gloves, if the conditions are right, in single digits or maybe even slightly below zero. Like, how is that possible? And it's just, it's crazy to me that phenomenon, if you will, of how your body adjusts and acclimates to its climate. And it's just weird. I mean, I guess the easiest way to say it is, like, think of what 50 degrees, the first 50 degrees in fall, think of what that feels like versus the first 50 degree day in, say, March. One's t-shirt weather, and one you're digging for your heaviest sweatshirt you own. You know what I mean? Like, it's just wild. So that happened, and it was a lot of fun, you know, hanging out Friday night with everybody, you know, just a couple beers, and then, you know, same thing, fished all day Saturday. And I brought all the podcast equipment, and, you know, the original plan was to, and we probably should have just done this Friday night, but we also knew that if we started drinking beer and podcasting, that Saturday morning might be a little tougher. So we chose not to do that, but we kind of had a loose plan to almost like a flight companion, but it wouldn't have been a flight companion just because I wasn't planning on, like, oh, let's get four different kinds of beers. No, it was just going to be an absolute shit show of, like, just drinking beer and hanging out, and it'd be voice in the background. I only have four microphones, so it can, you know, there was way more than that present. So it would have been a lot of fun, and probably should have still done it. But man, after being on the ice all day, and it was cold, even though it was nice because of no wind, it was still cold. And, you know, we changed lakes three times, a lot of running around, a lot of drilling holes. You know, and I think in a social event like that too, I just think you're using your brain more, you know, and say if you went out solo with just you and another buddy. So that's a whole other element. And then we ate food, and it was just time to crash. You know, there was a couple, you know, we had a big group messenger thing going for the pro staff, and they're like, where's the party at? Where's this? Where's that? And I was like, me and my roomie, we're back at the room already. Oh, man. I was like, I ain't going nowhere, son. I'm ready to turn this light out and pass out, which is what I did. So that was fun. Day one, Saturday, we headed out with the goal. We were hoping to get some walleye content, and that didn't really happen. We found some, like, small perch and some smaller crappies, and it just wasn't really happening. Again, super, super cold. So we decided to change lakes. Second lake, and I couldn't tell you the name of any of these lakes, by the way. For one, they're those Wisconsin, you know, like, I am assuming Native American based names. I no idea. Like, they were mentioned to me in one ear, out the other. And as far as, like, knowing where to go, I just followed the truck in front of me. So I, you put me in, you know, at gunpoint, and I had to tell you where I fished, I'm dead. I'm so screwed. This is not going to happen. I'd be like, Hayward area. Yeah. And there's only 8 zillion lakes in that part of the country, which is pretty cool, by the way. But it's, yeah. Anyways, went to this other lake, and then I started breaking out in hives because we pretty much went straight off the landing to, like, the community hole and started fishing. Like, who does that? But we did find fish. You know, it helps when you have a literal army of live scopes. Like, there were so many live scopes out there. It was crazy. But we found some fish, and they were very deep. We were fishing in a very deep basin. And so that whole conversation came up of, you know, the whole barrow trauma stuff, which is going to, that's going to segue into my rant on this one. That'll be the subject. So, you know, we had that conversation, and then thought about it and released the first couple of fish I caught. And then one of the guys was actually keeping fish. I was like, oh, we're keeping fish. And so then I started keeping fish, and then kind of regretted it later just because, God, now I got a clean fish. Son of a bitch. And I don't know. Sometimes when I know I'm going to eat fish that night, that's when I like to keep fish. And so, I don't know, I guess I got swept up in the moment. But in a way, I feel pretty good about it because I wasn't just releasing fish to maybe or maybe not die, right? The jury's still out on that, and that's what we'll talk about later. But so we did do that, and then me and Chad and I'd met Chad last year at the Midwest Sports Show in Minneapolis. We were working the same booth. He was there for North, and I was there for Relevant. Super cool dude. I like hanging out with Chad. Chad's my kind of fisherman because, like, that was a thing. You know, we're supposed to kind of all be in a group and take pictures. But after a while, like, if we weren't getting the content we wanted because the fish weren't biting, or we either got the content we wanted and we had some time, it's like, let's go explore. And so I would just hop on the back of his wheeler, and we'd rip across the lake and punch holes and chase fish. And that was fun. We had a super cool, in that second lake, we had a cool interaction where it was either a small muskie or a small northern that we could see on live scope. And he was chasing around the fish, and he was going way up in the water column and way down. And he, like, Chad would hook a small bluegill, and it would, like, follow it up. And we tried our dangest. We could not get that thing to hit one of those gills, but it was interesting, and it was fun. Like, we toyed with that thing for, like, or he toyed with us, however you want to look at it, for about 5 minutes. And it's just wild to watch it on the live scope. Like, that was, it's just so cool. And of course, that, you know, that came up in conversation, the whole live scope discussion, and that's been kind of going rampant on the Minnesota Tournament Trail Facebook page. Somebody's like, "Oh, can they still use electronics?" Yeah, because it's 2024. We still let our anglers use electronics. Like, thankfully, those voices are kind of dying out a little bit. But it's like, well, I feel like it's a should be a test of skill. And do these anglers even know how to fish? Well, if you're that good of a fisherman, get out there and win some money. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of ridiculous. I'm getting real tired of hearing it. And this is coming from somebody who doesn't even have live scope. I'm actually in a really crappy spot because I don't have live scope, but I fish with enough people that do. So when I strike out on my own and I fish from myself, it's like torture, bro. Be like, knowing there's a better way and I'm out here banging sticks together, you know, rhetorically speaking, with just my flasher, right? Which is a far cry better than not even having that. Don't get me wrong, but there's so many situations where I'm like, just that, like, nagging voice right in the back of your head that's like, how do I know I'm even in the right spot? Are there even a fish in this basin? Are the fish in this flat? Are this fish in this, like, when you can just drill one hole and search around you in 75 feet, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're over there. You know, you can just eliminate water so much faster. But not to go too deep down the forward-facing sonar rabbit hole, but if people are like, oh, it reduces the amount of holes you drill, that's a lie. Because then you get caught up in this pattern of chasing fish that won't stay fucking still. And you're constantly drilling on these fish and not catching them. And it's a two-person endeavor, let's be honest. Like, if you're trying to do it by yourself, which you can do, but it's such a hassle, you know, because, oh, they're over there, and you pace it off, you drill it, then you got to run back, look at your electronics, and then they move, and you got to run, you know, way easier with two people, way easier with three people even, you know, one person drilling, one person running behind them, you know, has the rod and the vex to stay on those fish. But there are definitely some pluses and negatives when it comes to the forward-facing sonar, for sure, and using it. And just having that in the back of your mind, it's like, it can be a distraction as well. But it's here to stay, folks. If you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. You better just, like, reconcile it and make your peace with it, because it is definitely here to stay. And it's just a different skill. You know, every time a new technology comes along, this happens. I'm old enough to remember when flasher started getting really good and people were like, oh, this is not fair and blah, 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 blah. And then you always hear these rumblings of banning it. And then underwater cameras came out. And then people really started losing their minds. And the same arguments, like, it's not fair. Is this even sporting? Do you even know anybody that actively fishes with a camera? And it seems like you get some tournament anglers that use it to find fish, but not too many people actually use it to catch the fish. And then otherwise, the only people I know that really use cameras, underwater cameras, on a consistent basis are people in, like, wheelhouses. And then they hook it up to their flat screen TV, and it's just fun to watch. You know, it just is. Especially if you got kids, it keeps them entertained. So that didn't come true. Pretty much all the doom and gloom things of any new technology, it never pans out. The impending apocalypse that people are worried about, just it just never seems to come to fruition. And what ends up happening is maybe the fish get pressured and you have to adapt and you have to change your tactics, you know, and in some way, they lose their effectiveness a little bit because so many people are doing it. And if you're going to stand apart from the crowd, you're going to have to think outside the box and come up with different stuff. All right, there's a rabbit hole I wasn't really intending on going down. So, back on track. Anyways, so yeah, we got some nice crappies there, some really nice ones. I think Chad caught the biggest of the day. I'm not sure if we bumped it, but it had to be close to 14, if not 14. So, really nice fish, but lots of 11s and 12s and north of 12s were caught. So it was fun. A lot of good fish caught, and it was active, so everybody was catching fish. Went to the last lake again, trying to get on some walleye content. And we don't know if they're locals, but they were not with us. They're fishing on them. They caught a couple walleyes, but we didn't. I ended up catching a pike. I jigged up a pike and I caught a perch, and that was pretty much it. I don't know if anybody else caught anything, maybe a perch, another small thing, but we had this entire weed flat covered with tip ups and stuff. And that was wild to me how I just thought we were going to be chasing flags all evening. And that didn't really pan out. And then Chad and I ran off to go explore again. Found some fish, but couldn't get them to bite. We don't know what they were. They looked like pretty good marks, though. And then, went back and, again, had meals. And the Packers were playing. And Derek abandoned all of us to go watch his Packers play. And thankfully lose. So now I can enjoy football again to the rest of the way. And I'm going to be honest. When they started winning, or they were winning that game, and I think I actually said this in my group text before the game even started, when they won last week, I was like, you know what? If the Packers somehow make it to the Super Bowl, I'm done. I'm done with football. I'm just done. I can't do this to myself. I can't do the torture anymore. I can't. So I was very relieved. I didn't even watch it. You know, it was on the bar, but I left, and then I got back to the room, and I was kind of getting the notifications on my phone and stuff, but I went to bed. I just went to bed before the game was over and then woke up to Facebook and seeing Packer fans crying. So that made me really happy and just set the stage for a really good day. So we headed out and it was much milder. I think we were already above zero to start the day Sunday, but it was windy already. It was starting to get windy. It was supposed to get even windier as the day went. And man, what a difference that makes, you know, like below zero, no wind. Greater than 10 degrees above and a lot of wind for sure. And we head out this lake again. We had agreed to just like basically go chase flags, maybe catch some bass through the ice that this lake was known for. And I mean, it did have walleye stuff, and yeah. And so we did catch, it wasn't as many flags as I thought, but there were a few popped off. And the first fish caught was a bass, and it was a smallmouth. I did not expect that because this was not really a very small lake, and, you know, the talk was largemouth. And they're like, oh, yeah, there are some in here. There's just not many. So that was pretty cool. So that made for some good content. And then, again, Chad and I went venturing, and there is this, like, little tiny small lake connected to the one we were on. Well, it was a small lake, the one we were on, but there's even a smaller lake connected to that because when we first started, there wasn't much happening. So we ventured off, and then we found some crappies over there, but it wasn't anything impressive. So went back, joined up the crew. Some people had already left, headed back to wherever home was. It's some guys from Illinois. And so we hung out, started wrapping up. Another flag popped. I caught a little pike on the flag. And then, when we rolled up, everybody was kind of leaving. And then right at the last minute, Blake with Norfin Tolson, who I've had on the podcast. So if you want to go dig through the past episodes and listen to the episode with Blake, it was a good guest. We could talk trout fishing, and that's what we ended up doing. Because he likes the trout fish, so I actually mentioned to him, like, oh, I'm surprised we don't have any trout lakes listed on our to-do list here. You know, he goes, oh, I got plenty of that content for Norfin. But he was like, are you headed out, or we're going to go to a trout lake? Give it. I was thinking, well, I don't want to get back too late. And I looked at my watch. It wasn't even 11 yet. And I was like, oh, shit, we got tons of time. Hell yeah, I'll go do that. So four of us that remained, it was myself, Blake, Chad, and Derek, went to this little trout lake and kind of set up. Chad did what Chad does and went, ran, you know, we all started fishing. He ran around this little tiny lake, which was the small, by far the smallest lake of the weekend. Like, this thing was super small, obviously deep because I had trout in it. He ran around with live scope, and then he came screaming back, says, "Hey, I got a little corner here where they're loaded. I marked a bunch." So we all headed over there. And after we drilled a bunch of holes and let the thing quiet down, I actually caught trout through the ice on my schoolie rod, which was tons of fun. Wasn't a huge trout, but it was nice, good eater size, so I kept it. And then Chad had brought some of those jaw jackers down, which I've never used. So we had some of those set up. And, you know, if we had an army of those, because you can use, three lines a piece or something like that in Wisconsin in the wintertime, man, we could have loaded up that little bay with jaw jackers. I think we probably would have been just running around, because all of a sudden one went off. Derek was closest. He went and grabbed it. So he caught his, like, first big trout through the ice. That was cool. It was a nice one. I think it was, like, 20 inches, like, real nice. And then he reset that, and another one popped off, and I grabbed it, and it was another. We didn't measure that one, but it was right there at 20, maybe slightly smaller. Still a really, really nice fish. Beautiful colors on it, too. And then had another one pop off. Chad went and grabbed that one. He was getting a little salty that we were all catching fish on his jaw jackers. But and then that one must have gotten some trees. It broke them off because we were, like, right next to some flooded timber. And reset it, and then he finally was able to catch another one, and they were really kind of popping. It was a lot of fun. And then I don't know what time, it was a little after 1 o'clock or something when we finally pulled the pin and started to head back. So that was a great way to end the trip. A lot of fun, like I said, hanging out with all the guys, all the other pro staff. Got some good pictures. He's starting to slowly put them out on Facebook. So if you don't already, you know, go ahead and follow Norfin USA on Facebook. Instagram, you can see some really cool pictures. Dog Glimmerbean was out there. It was nice to see his bearded face again. And of course, he would have been on the podcast had we actually podcasted, but we didn't. So he wasn't even really fishing much. He was out there. He had his camera gear, and he was just out there. Out there taking pictures and getting that saucy content. Those pictures are, like I said, they're already starting to release some. They've shared some in the confidential group, and really good photos. So that was a lot of fun. I was just glad I could do it this year. I was really looking forward to it. So we'll see what happens next year. I may or may not get back into tournament fishing. It just all depends on my schedule and my fishing partner's schedule, if we're going to do it or not. I kind of want to. I'll tell you that. That's kind of where my brain's at. One hand, it's really nice not having that commitment of having to run around and pre-fish and the pressure that you put on yourself to be competitive and that, and just kind of be able to go and fun fish. And then on the other hand, I miss that competitive nature. You know, I miss that focused goal, and I miss the guys. I miss Minnesota Made guys. All the tournaments, just hanging out. You know, it's always just a good get together and hang when you're with those guys. Bunch of a good group of dudes. So, and gals. So that's just always fun. But yeah, I got back. Head down to the cities. Actually at my sister's in Prior Lake right now, Monday morning, recording this with my coffee, and I will get it uploaded on this very same Monday. So it's hot and fresh, just like my coffee. Sorry, let's get into the rant here, which I don't really have a rant, but you know how that goes. It's not always a rant. It's just kind of my worthless opinion when it comes to that. But the barrow trauma, right? So the DNR put out this study, in air quotes. It's not air quotes. It was a study. It just wasn't a highly detailed, heavily nuanced study. You know, it was kind of very, but they're looking at the effects of barrow trauma, and they were using forward-facing sonar to find these fish. And so that was part of the study, part of the article, part of the video. And some people really grabbed onto that, like they were, you know, the conspiracy-minded people. They had their tinfoil hats on, and they were like, oh, this is a way how the DNR is going to ban forward-facing sonar, right? And like I'd mentioned earlier, depending on who you ask, some people might be all for that ban. But that wasn't, you know, and the DNR had since come out, like, that was not the point of the study. What they were studying was barotrauma and the effects of catching fish out of deep water and releasing them. And so they had tested it out, you know, in water less than 20 feet and water over 20 feet and then like 40 feet. And they drilled these big holes and they had this big giant vertical net system. And so they would catch fish and they would release it into that net. And they had these hub houses over and they had heaters running in there so the holes wouldn't freeze over. And then they're going to check them 24 hours later and see and count how many, you know, how many fish were released, how many fish were still alive, how many died. And, you know, and I would say not surprisingly, the ones that were caught out of the deeper water, those numbers, you know, the dead ones grew exponentially, like quite a bit. And then a famous YouTuber, I think was it Uncut Angling? Is that Aaron Weeb? I think I could be wrong about that. Sorry if I'm butchering that. I guess I could look it up on my magic device right here as I ramble on. I'll do it right now. Barotrauma. I don't know. Let's just try that. I totally spelled it wrong. So Angling Buzz did the one with the DNR, if you want to go check that out. Yeah, it was Uncut Angling was the one. This is bad science truths and tips for, you know, he did a whole thing. What was cool about that, though, is that if you watch his, I would recommend going and watching both of those videos. So you can, like, don't just listen to other people, their opinions. Like, go check it out for yourself. I think they both have their merits. Like, they both, you know, and it's just one data point, right? So each one. So I think it'd be better if they actually like work together, because one of the interesting things with the Uncut Angling one, and I was like, how did he figure this out? But the way he was releasing his fish, you know, he'd pull them up from deep water. And I do want to say, like, in the video, he's like, he was not recommending that people go out and catch fish from super deep water. He was not saying it's okay. He was not saying you should definitely do this. It's not what he was saying. And he also wasn't saying these fish will live. He was like, they just seem to do better than the DNR ones. So he had this thing, like, you dip the crappie in the water with his mouth open. The mouth, like, fills with water. You kind of burp them, get the air out. You close their mouth. You turn them head down, and then they swim away. And then he was using his forward-facing sonar, and you would watch them swim all the way back down to 40 feet and join the school again. So it appeared that they lived, right? They at least swam away a lot healthier than the ones that the DNR did, where some of those just stay on the top and their mouth is like stuck open with lockjaw and they're just kind of, you know, barely moving when fin is kind of like wiggling, you know, and some of them would swim down and some of them just stayed on the surface, you know, alive. But you're like, yeah, that fish is fucked for sure. So it was just interesting to see that release technique. And I'm like, how did he figure that out? That's what I'd like to talk to him. I should have to send him a message. I know he's got a pretty big following. He probably won't see it, but that would be, he could be an interesting guest to get on for sure. So maybe I'll try to shoot a message. If anybody knows how to reach him, get a hold of me and help facilitate that. That would be a really, really interesting show to kind of talk about that. But again, so I think maybe there is a better way. Now I think if they do some sort of study, maybe go back to that big net thing, which I feel like that, you know, introduces a different stress, right? They're not free. They can swim up and down the water column, but they can't swim, you know, right, left or whatever. So that might be an additional stressor that has to be, you know, if we're going to talk science, we have to control every factor possible, you know, that goes into it. You know, that's good science. And, you know, and that's science. If science says something, it doesn't necessarily make it a fact. It's just, it's a data point. It's a process. You got to look at all that stuff. And that's why I say both videos, I think it's good information. You know, more information is always better than no information or less information. And so now I think if they work, you know, hand in hand, or they at least like piggyback off of each other's study, if you will, we can start getting a better glimpse of what that looks like, you know. And again, both parties, they weren't recommending, you know, catch fish out of deep water. And I would say the safe bet is if you are catching fish out of deep water, much like we did, it probably was better that most of us started keeping those fish. Because, you know, it's like, You know how you don't have to wonder? You're like, it's 100% lethality when you're keeping fish, right? But at least you're not wasting the resource and they're not dying later. You know, at least you're actually getting to eat the fish. So if you're going to fish, and I would just recommend, so that's the ethics of it, right? I think if you're going to fish for really deep fish, just have a plan to keep them. And when you got your limit, you got your limit. Go to a different lake where you can catch them shallow and not have to worry about it. You know, that would be the ethical thing to do for sure. The DNR was out there too on that lake, the lake we're catching them deep, and really friendly guy. It was Wisconsin's free fishing weekend, so nobody needed a license, which was very cool. I feel like that's why he was so happy and in such a good mood, because his workload that day was super easy. All he had to do was check limits and not licenses and go through that whole thing. It's just like, how many fish did you catch? You know, and on that lake, the limit for crappies was 10. He was very nice out there, and shot the breeze with him for a little bit. Really cool. It's always nice when you have a nice, friendly interaction like that with any sort of law officer, which has generally been my experience. They've been, more times have been friendlier than not, but I have dealt with a few COs that were just like, they're just crabby when they meet you, like right out of the gate. You know, it's like, all right, dude, like, do you need to be that way? You know, and we're not breaking laws anyways, so I don't know why you're crabby. You should be happy. But anyways, that's another rant for another time. So yeah, all right, well, welcome back to the weekend recaps and rants. Maybe I'll try to get back on track with these. I know some of you enjoyed them. Derek is one of them. Shout out Derek Kumferman. And it was fun hanging out with him. He's a fun dude. And yeah, I'm not even going to say sorry, not sorry. I'm just going to say not sorry your Packers lost. Because, we talked about that. But I will say he took it like a champ. He was in good spirits all Sunday. And lots of smiles, lots of laughs, and it was just a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll do it next year. Maybe even if I get back into competitive fishing, that the weekends will work out, and then I can do both, right? Is that too much to ask for? Just do both things? This is what it is. But all right, coming up, I have a podcast I did last week with Cody Puller. If you're friends of the podcast, you are familiar with that name. So he has he's back to guiding waterfowl again. He's down in Arkansas right now smashing specs. So is he back into that game? Did he abandon the bill fishing thing? You'll have to tune in to find out. I'll release that later this week. Hopefully, no promises. Hopefully we get another Waterfowl Wednesday up with Nick Johnson. Again, he's down guiding, so it's really hit or miss if we can get a Waterfowl Wednesday out. Of course, I probably could do a solo episode of those, or maybe find a fill-in, like maybe David Goose or somebody like that. So keep tunes. Maybe not get a Waterfowl Wednesday. Sorry. I know I could be more fastidious than that. But, you know, it's kind of the nature of this podcast. Kind of fly by the seat of our pants. But I will try to start getting you more consistent content. I'm going to get hopefully more guests. Being the director of the MTT should open some doors and make some cool connections. And I guess you can expect some more walleye content, for better or for worse, depending on who you are. Because if I do these weekend recaps and rants with all the tournaments that are going on all summer long for the MTT, that's going to be a lot of the recaps. It's going to be the tournaments series, so what happened there. But, you know, in between, I do still plan on bass fishing. So, and hopefully I can still, the schedule allows, I can still fish some Loon State Bassmaster events too. So lots of stuff. It's about to get real, 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 real busy. I'm going to try to keep up on this as best I can. Thanks to everybody that has stuck with me through the hit and miss schedule. I've kind of kept full scale limping along. It hasn't totally disappeared. And those who have had to trudge through and either listened or didn't listen to the full skull episodes of the Vikings podcast. But those are fun. That's just a really good way for me to talk with my buddy Jimmy from, he's from here, Minnesota, but he lives in enemy territory right now, Michigan. But I will say this, go Lions. I'm fully behind them right now. They haven't had anything good to look forward to in forever. and there are full-ass adults that have, this was the first time they have witnessed a playoff victory ever in their life. So I'm okay with rooting for them the rest of the way out. But, you know, you all saw the logo. It's going to be Ravens and Niners, and the Ravens are going to lose because that's the conspiracy. And in a way, I kind of hope it pans out because it's just more to talk about. So there it is. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You know what it is. Whatever your passion, pursue it full scale.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.